Hey everybody, this is Tom from A Cast of the Past. Josh and I are still on our little excursion through history as we play Chrono Trigger, the winner of the 2019 March Madness poll that you all voted on. But in the meantime, we wanted to hook you up with some episodes to tide you over. So, these are going to be a collection of episodes from a previous version of this podcast that Josh and I hosted, and in this we looked at retro titles, similar to how we do on A Cast of the Past now. While you're listening to this, you may hear some dated references. These were recorded around 2017, 2018-ish. You may even hear snippets of our old soundtrack. But for now, please sit back and enjoy this week's episode on Eat Lead, The Return of Matt Hazard.
So we figured after going through an entire list of games that we had lined up that we both really wanted to talk about Eat Lead, The Return of Matt Hazard.
Yeah.
Because it has been... Well, it's a game.
It's a game.
When was the last time that you played this, Tom?
I played it around its release date. So it's been... It's almost been a decade since this game came out. And I just think it's really interesting, given what the game was interested in exploring and the manner in which it went about it, how... It kind of has just disappeared, you know? It's a little baffling to me. I don't know.
I'm surprised. Now, there was a sequel release to it later, a little bit after, I think, the actual release of the game. When was this release? Because I know I graduated high school.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
after this came out.
Yeah, so for the uninitiated, we'll just break it down. So Eat Lead, The Return of Matt Hazard was released in February of 2009 on the 26th specifically, and it's a third-person shooter.
Yeah, it's pretty much an over-the-shoulder shooter, very similar to like Gears of War.
Yes, yes. And specifically, Eat Lead is a fourth-wall-breaking action game focused on a washed-up gaming character named Matt Hazard. And Matt is trying to reclaim his fame after a massive wave of love and success in the 1990s as one of the most popular video games era, followed by a period where he just hit rock bottom and was washed up. So Eat Lead finds him trying to enter the modern gaming landscape in a brand new action game, only to find that something isn't right and his very existence may be on the line.
Yeah, so a little history on Matt Hazard. He, like Tom was saying, he's a legendary game hero who was returning to glory after 25 years after his debut. And he started off as like a side-scrolling 8-bit action hero on like the retro consoles and then proceeded to go up where he found fame in the 3D world, which let's call it like it is. He's pretty much Duke Nukem.
Oh, absolutely. They're not afraid of hiding the references. I mean, what I thought was interesting is that his 8-bit games that they detail, they look like Contra, and then he moves into the Duke Nukem mold. Mm-hmm. As you said, it's a game that doesn't disguise its references. When you see Matt Hazard interacting with somebody, or you see the game introducing a concept, right away you're like, oh, I know exactly what you're taking a shot at.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, even from some of the villains, which we're going to get into in a little bit, one of his biggest nemesis in the game, to some of the bosses in the game that just rip off every other type of franchise that's out there.
Yes.
I mean, I remember watching the first trailer, and it was done kind of as like a behind the music spoof that started off with him going from the 8-bit to modern consoles. And then I think in the trailer he was talking about how he took control of his own games, and then he was doing things like hazmat carts, which is the like the Mario Kart or Crash Bandicoot Racing and stuff like that version of his games.
Yes,
and then there was the spy thriller that he did, You Only Live 1,317 Times. The Nightmare of the Biosphere, which is the survival horror, which if you look at the
cover
artwork to it, it was
completely
BioShock.
I know. It's great. It's so good.
Yeah, and then he had like a fantasy adventure game and stuff too. So it was like and all these things too, which is really awesome. He mentions all of this and it all gets incorporated somehow into the game.
Yes.
Through whether it's villains or whether it's characters that he has to save or talk to. It was very creative of knowing that it's a character breaking the fourth wall, at the same time.
It's several layers of just meta humor stacked on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Both in that everyone's aware that they're a video game character and they're aware of the larger video game industry, but also that the game is using all these fourth wall breaking gags to provide commentary on the state of what gaming was in 2009, the trends, the ideas, and everything like that. So it's several layers of commentary wrapped in itself, and it's pretty amusing beginning to end, in my opinion.
So the people who developed this game is called Vicious Cycle Software.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing some research into them just to see what type of games, because this was like, it followed the suit of all the third-person action over-the-shoulder games, very similar to Killswitch and, like I mentioned earlier, Gears of War. But I was looking to see what other games that they made, what other games they developed, and they were known for Dora the Explorer and the Purple Planet, the Curious George game, Flushed Away, and a whole bunch of Ben 10 games that came out.
Well, so were they still called Vicious Cycle when they were publishing the Dora games?
I mean that's from what I'm seeing here, and all the research that I did, that's what they popped up as. It's like, man, all the previous games that they worked on, and I'm like, are you kidding me?
I want to play a Dora game just to see, like, you know, Vicious Cycle presents Dora the Explorer. You know,
I actually have Dora and the Purple Planet on the GameCube in my game room, so
I'm not gonna ask why.
We're gonna probably have to do it was at a yard sale. I got it. It was a key. If I see a GameCube game, I need to get a GameCube game, because they're very few and far between nowadays. D3 Publisher was the company that actually published the game. And once again, looking at their line of games, it was like really crazy. They really love their Ben 10 games. That's all I'm going to tell you. These teams must have worked together to make every single Ben 10 game that came out. But then they also made Dark Sector, which Dark Sector was very similar to the style of gameplay that Eat Lead was.
Yeah.
And then you had other games like the Marvel Puzzle Quest, which, I mean, I think that's on your smartphones and stuff. They made a couple of your Adventure Time games. But this is the shocker of the two, of all those games, I'm sorry. They made Bioshock 2. Oh, they published Bioshock 2 in Japan.
Oh.
Yeah, only that's the Japanese version of Bioshock 2, though.
I wonder what's so different about it that it required a whole different publisher beyond 2K, you know?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I have no idea, but yeah, that's just some of the little things about the development side of the game. So it's crazy that D3 Publisher and Vicious Cycle Software just came together to make a game like this. Completely out of their realm of games that they're used to making or what they're known for. And then they go ahead and they get an actual cast of characters for this game. Now, it's not a huge crazy cast. There's only like three extremely noticeable names or recognizable names in it. What did you think of the cast, Tom?
Well, I was impressed that they managed to get Will Arnett and Neil Patrick Harris, especially Neil Patrick Harris at the time. He was on the rise with his, after 2004, when Harold and Kumar had him in that little cameo, he kind of blew up with How I Met Your Mother. So the late 2000s were just this period of Neil Patrick Harris was the comedic get of the industry. So him being the villain in this game, I thought that was pretty interesting. And Will Arnett, I think history is going to show that beyond his incredible work in Arrested Development, Will Arnett's greatest strength is voice acting. BoJack, mm-hmm. BoJack Horseman, I think, cements that. But I think he does some pretty amusing work here. He instills Matt with a lot of character, and he really nails the type of character cliches that Matt Hazard is trying to embody.
Yeah, when I was going back and I was looking over some things for this game, you can tell that there is a lot of Lego Batman.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm darkness. Just listening to him, and I'm just like, are you kidding me? Like it's the same voice. Now, granted, it's just Will Arnett's voice, pretty much, just in a little bit more sarcastic manner here and there. Right. But, I mean, it's pretty much, like, the Lego Batman voice that he's doing in this entire game, which, if it works, you know, by all means,
hey,
do it.
Ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, with that being said, let's talk about Matt Hazard's adventure. Not his first adventure, but the first adventure we were able to play through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the game starts off with Matt Hazard starring in his newest game, which is as a no-nonsense detective who plays by his own rules. Ooh. Which is like the most...
He's got street smarts.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think the first level starts off.
He went to the school of hard knocks.
Yeah. He's a loose cannon cop on the edge, pretty much. The first level starts off as you're in a Japanese steakhouse, which when you see it zooms out of him, it looks very similar to Hitman and Splinter Cell and all those games that were big around that time frame when this got released. But about halfway through the level, you encounter the first crazy character, which was Sony Tang.
Yeah. Really playing up the 70s era blaxploitation action character types.
Yeah, yeah. He's a 70s inspired kung fu villain. He had the like the tiger robe on and head bandana with the afro sticking out of it and everything. It's like, okay, so you're going extremely cliche. Okay. All right. One thing I did like when playing through it, though, like, it's an action adventure, kind of an action adventure game, but it's a straight up action shooter where you don't see any blood in the entire game.
Oh, that's interesting. Did you notice that? I didn't actually notice that. Well, I did. In terms of like content, I did notice, like, when I was just going over stuff in replaying for this episode, while it plays up being a kind of a parody of those purposely vulgar games like Duke Nukem, the characters in the game are both kind of like self-censored in a way. Like, at one point in the game later, Matt goes to beat somebody up, and you don't see the fight, and you see a little block of text that says too violent to show. So yeah, on you commenting that there was no blood, it's like, huh, this is supposed to be a parody of blood and guts action games that doesn't actually have a lot of blood. That's interesting.
Yeah, so like when you're shooting people, like, their body parts are like glitching, and like there's like coating and stuff like that that's spraying out of them and stuff. So I thought that was really cool because, yeah, it's not blood, but it's working with the game that he knows that he's a video game character. So when he's shooting people, he's not seeing blood. He's actually seeing the coating disappear from the person, which I thought that was actually creative on their side. But when you get halfway through, and it was really cool, like, you're shooting these mob bosses and this guy here and this and so on, and like cooks and people who this steakhouse is apparently sending after you to destroy. The game starts to glitch out, and you start noticing like your things that you're supposed to be hiding behind actually start glitching into other things, or walls start moving around and whatnot. And then you run into pretty much your first, like, the main villain of the game.
I'd say he's the Jaws to the main villain. Like, okay. You know what I mean? Like, he's the heavy.
Who introduces himself as your worst nightmare, except in the daytime when you're not asleep.
The eloquent phrasing of Sting Sniperscope, yes. Who also has an eloquent name.
Prepare to begin your death.
you didn't do it with the Arnold accent that they give him in the game, though.
Which, once again, going right back to the game knowing that it's making parodies of everything and anything. Sting Sniperscope, which is going to take me a while to get used to saying throughout this entire podcast, is pretty much an entire ripoff of everything 80s about Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes, and what I also think is interesting about Sting's character is that I found that he was very intentionally supposed to be a parody of Raiden from Metal Gear Solid 2, in that he's an unexpected new protagonist who takes the place of the expected main character. And even throughout the game, as you continue to encounter Sting, he keeps reappearing with enhanced body upgrades, the way that when Raiden would come back in subsequent Metal Gear Solid games, he would just be this crazy cyborg ninja with new things and everything. So they were totally just taking pot shots at Raiden and how he was introduced and what ended up becoming of that character.
As he's getting ready to shoot you, because he's more powerful than you are, and he's a better version of you, and he's who's supposed to be taking over. The game kind of pauses, but Matt is still able to move around, and that's when you get introduced to pretty much your sidekick throughout the entire game. QA, pretty much informing him that he was supposed to die and be replaced by Sniperscope. Yeah, it is pretty much Metal Gear Solid 2. Which, when did Metal Gear Solid 2 come out?
2001.
Oh, okay. So it's...
And Metal Gear Solid 4 had been out...
They're really riding on that joke.
Yeah, Metal Gear Solid 4 had also been out for a year at that point.
So again, like I said, with Sting, he's completely supposed to be a Raiden.
Yeah, yeah.
And with QA, I think it's interesting to also point out that, as we mentioned earlier, its references are very on the nose, and QA is Cortana from the Halo series.
Yeah, I was thinking Cortana. I was also thinking Otacon.
True. Oh, because the character, her costume design, yeah, a female.
Yeah,
if you look
at the way she is, you know, nerdy person, glasses, you know, the way that it's kind of a mix between the two of them.
Yeah, yeah.
But
and she, of course, is presented as kind of the annoyed girlfriend trope, where she's really eager to support you and, like, you know, make sure you go all the way, but, like, she's always like, oh, Matt, like, oh, don't make that joke, you know, like, don't call me babe.
Yeah, yeah. And don't worry, he does it multiple times throughout the entire game, so you won't...
He doesn't listen, because he's a rascal.
I noticed when I was playing through, though, did you read anything on the loading screens?
Well, there was always little cute gags on the loading screens that I enjoyed. What caught your eye in particular, though?
So when he first says it's hazard time.
Yeah. Which is his catchphrase that he's in love with, but everyone seems pretty annoyed by.
Yeah, it hasn't aged too well. And so when I heard it, I was like, I get exactly what you're going for, but please don't keep saying it. But he does. But after he says it, it goes to a loading screen, and it said, it's hazard time was first used by pro golfer Panther Irons when he sliced into a lake in the game Caddy Hack. And I'm like, okay, now you're just grasping for everything you could possibly get.
Seriously. Oh. So we've met QA now. So where does that take us in the narrative? What do we discover when we meet QA?
So with QA... It starts to unravel the story a little bit more, where there is, oh man, what was it? It was
Wally Wellesley.
Wallace Wally Wellesley.
Triple Dubs.
Triple W, which is voiced by Neil Patrick Harris, which he is the son of a guy who owned a game company. He took over it, and he wants to pretty much destroy Matt Hazard.
Yes, because, and I think is one of the most interesting parts of the game. So Matt Hazard is the star character, the star franchise of this company. And Matt is signed to a lifetime contract with this company, the company being called Monolith Megasoft, which is a play on several different game publishers. But so Wally hates Matt, because he wants to get rid of him. He has his personal reasons, where he always thought that Matt Hazard's games were too hard and that was a slight against him. But he wants to remove Matt from these franchises. But due to the lifetime video game character contract that Matt has, he cannot be removed from the games unless he is permanently killed within them. And what I think is super fascinating about that is that it implies, as you were kind of picking up on earlier when you mentioned the manner in which characters die in this game, the stars of video games in this universe are apparently sentient beings with rights and laws that apply to them and keep them, like, legally safe from things.
Yeah.
So Wally's trying to kill Matt because Matt has a contract that gives him a right to continue having a job until he dies, which is just hilarious when you think about it, that, like, this universe has sentient video game characters with their own, like, you know, consciousness and artificial intelligence. It's great. I love the wackiness of, like, just the things that this game just tells you and says, hey, just go with it. Just go with it.
Yeah, yeah. One part that I really love, though, I mean, talking about Wallace's part, and it's like, I beat every game when I was the age of 12 or something like that, and the only games I couldn't beat was Hazard's game, which was really nice that you have a character who actually has a reasoning for wanting to destroy the main character of the game.
Yeah.
Now how crazy and far-fetched it is. Now, the fact that he is going after a fictional character that's like wanting to go after Bugs Bunny because of something he did in a cartoon. You know what I mean? It's
yeah,
just...
right. But, like, as I was saying, though, like, he's doing it knowing that Matt is apparently alive to some degree or another. Like,
yeah,
you can't go after Bugs Bunny because Bugs Bunny is just ink and paper. But like in this world, Bugs Bunny, if Bugs Bunny was a character in the Eat Lead universe, he apparently would be able to sign a contract for animated characters to have like a union or something. You know what I mean? It's yeah. It's crazy.
Very Roger Rabbit-ish.
Exactly. Oh, exactly.
And that goes into the end of the game a little bit, but we'll get to that then when we work our way down. Level 2 was a basic dance club, which was very similar to Duke Nukem 3.
Mm-hmm.
3D, I'm sorry. Duke Nukem 3D. But level 3 actually was one of the levels that I was laughing so hard in when I was playing because of Bill the Wizard.
Who has a very particular celebrity accent.
Yes. I won't tell you who it is.
But you're probably familiar if you hear the voice. And his name.
And it also had my favorite weapons in the entire game, which was the Sokums.
That and the sniper rifle, which is mounted on an arcade sniper rifle stand, similar to those...
Silent Scope.
Yeah, Silent Scope, which was a great series you could typically find in movie theater arcades, but I thought that was ingenious, you know, just completely lean into the concept. It was mm-hmm. great. Oh, yeah. I want to talk about Sokums really quick, mm-hmm. Because this blew my mind. So, in the beginning of the game, when you mentioned they're showing the behind the music rise and fall of Matt Hazard, and he talks about how he wanted to take his image in different directions, he talks about kart racing, and then he talks about the game that apparently sealed his doom, and he describes it as a non-violent water gun-based third-person shooter. And when I heard that for the first time since 2009 when I played that title, I almost pooped my pants because, Josh... Lead predicted Splatoon.
Yes, it did. That I didn't think about it. I was like, he mentioned it earlier in the game, and I was like, okay. And then you see it in the game. I didn't even put the pieces together about Splatoon. And that's how many years before Splatoon?
A full 8 years.
Eight full, years.
Oh, sorry. The first Splatoon came out in 2015. Correct. 14 or 15.
14 or 15. So it's about 4, 5 to 6 years.
Yeah.
And that's insane.
I was just blown away.
Maybe that's where Nintendo got it from, though.
Nintendo secretly scanning Vicious Cycle games for ideas.
Well, they made Dora the Explorer Purple Planet on GameCube. They already have their ins.
Miyamoto's just like combing through Eat Lead. He's like, gotta get some fresh ideas. Non-violent water gun based third person shooter, huh?
Yeah.
Add some tentacles to it because we're Japanese, of course, and boom, we have a game.
But yeah, after you get the Sokums and after you get the best guns in any game, like shooter game that I like, the super soakers, where he actually has to pump them like the actual super soakers to shoot them. That was genius. It was great.
The frustration of childhood games brought into video gaming.
And then you have to go again, and once again defeat Sniper Scope for the second time, which he's added more armor to himself. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's it was a very interesting level when Bill came back and shot down the giant carrier with his wand.
Saves the day.
He saves the day in the most Bill way, I would say.
Bill. So the game kind of repeats this bit by bit, where it introduces new characters either for comedic effect or characters that are parodies of gaming icons. And the next level features a comedic character that we are introduced to named...
Dexter from the Matt and Dexter games.
Yes.
Which is no correlation to Jack and Dexter.
No, not at all.
At all. At all. But the level itself, it is a mansion that zombies are included in.
Josh, I have a quick question for you about the zombie level here.
Yeah.
Do you think that they were intentionally trying to... So, 2009, that's when Call of Duty World at War came out. And mm-hmm. World at War featured the Nazi zombies mode. And I feel like that was the beginning of a kind of explosion of games that had to have some kind of zombie feature in it. You know, I feel like we saw a lot of that. So... Yeah. do you think Eat Lead was ahead of its time, or just they put zombies in to kind of just be like, oh, zombies are an expected cliche at this point?
I honestly think it was just a ripoff of Resident Evil.
Oh, it's true. That's true.
A mansion, zombies.
Right.
I mean, it's the way that it was set up that, like, yes, they're from another game coming into this game, but it was really nice feature, though, because it's like, okay, you're making jokes on everything so far,
mm-hmm.
and now you're going and doing, you're making fun of the PlayStation stuff, the Jack and Dexter, the Resident Evil. The next level, we pretty much go into making fun of another iconic game character from Microsoft's side of things. But
yes,
even at the end of this, where when you run into Dexter and you find out that he's working for Wallace, he sends the group of female androids to kill you.
Yes.
Which is very, I mean, I thought it was very Austin Powers-ish with the fembots.
Oh, yeah. I think that.
But yeah, so you have to work your way back down, and then you realize once the portal opens up to get out of the level, QA's there to save you, but she's acting differently now. And
they introduce some mystery.
It has to be the same QA, even though she's slightly tinted red, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, there can't be any reason that it wouldn't be her, even though she's also acting completely differently.
Yeah, no. Which leads into the next level, the cruise ship.
A cruise ship, a carnival cruise of some sort.
Yes, where you meet a chef.
Who is a master of his craft.
He was in space. He was the master chef in space.
And he's being chased by space marines.
Which,
get it?
It's like they're like trying to throw every little thing, like, come on, you need to know this reference, you need to know this reference. If you put it together, what do you get?
I will say this is the only character parody that I felt was really weak.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of did more with them. Yeah, everyone else just has something that's either really nailing the cliches of the original character, or doing something at least a little bit creative, like with Bill the Wizard. But like Master Chef, he's just a regular dude who's a chef. Like he doesn't do anything that's like particularly Master Chief like.
Yeah.
Like there was no gags. Like, you know what have been a great gag? We never see Master Chef's face or anything. You know, it's just, hey, I'm a chef.
Yeah, and, you only saw him from the neck down.
Yeah, seriously. But yeah, like, they don't do anything with that. It was a little bit of a bummer.
This whole level, though, was pretty much just a way to prove to you that the other QA was, in fact, an evil QA.
What?
I know. But Matt wasn't fooled. And that's what I thought was hilarious. He's like, yeah, I know. I know which one of you is the bad one.
Matt is, like, not amused by, like, anything that happens mm-hmm. in the game. Like, anytime something happens, he's just like, I get what this is referencing. Why are you wasting my time with this?
Please stop. He's like, oh, yeah, you're clearly the bad one because you flirted with me. Like, mm-hmm. The game knows every type of stereotype that's happened in pop culture.
Yeah. And Matt's, like, not a dummy to all of it. He's just mm-hmm. kind of like a jaded, self-aware guy himself. So he's like, I get this.
All yeah.
Right. Can we please move on?
The story itself starts to go all kind of... It gets rushed a little bit now towards the rest of the game. They go to a warehouse to find all of his items. And
mm-hmm. and we meet Captain Carpenter there,
yep.
who is parodying a iconic Nintendo character. I don't think you'll guess which one it is.
No.
But I actually thought his was pretty funny. Probably my favorite of all the parodies, just mm-hmm. because I don't know why, but the Swedish-ish accent they gave him, peppered with his, like... He looks like an old man Logan version of Mario. I don't know why. I gotta keep.
Wait, who
out
is
of
this
it.
Mario you're talking about?
Oh, Mario Lopez. You know.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah.
Beloved entertainment news host.
When it came to it, though, the only like standout part of this entire level for me was when you went to Alto Stratus, which was clearly
every Final Fantasy protagonist rolled into one.
Yes, and when you got to the speech through text boxes, and he's like talking out loud to the text boxes, and he has to constantly keep hitting the button to advance it.
It's great. And what I really loved about Altos's introduction too is the game completely taps into the style of JRPG cutscenes. Like, we get these dramatic angles and mm-hmm. these quick cuts. Like, it knows how to nail the style of the things that it's parodying, and I loved it. It was really good.
Yeah. You get there to the end. They, of course, taken all the weapons and kind of proceeded to the final level of the game, which was the docks, where you just had to fight through everything that you ran into.
Yep.
Everything that you ran into in the beginning of the game, they pretty much threw everything at you at one shot. And then you get to the final level of Sting's sniper scope.
Again.
Which, yes, his third final level, which was pretty much just like a giant mech type thing that shot rays out.
Yeah, like a Metal Gear ray almost.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't consider it something that crazy.
Nah, I'm sorry, I'm being ridiculous.
Right before you get to it, though, there is a really nice throwback to Wolfenstein.
Mm.
Which was the entire like section of the game that was done in the Wolfenstein 3D map, which I actually thought was great. I mean, you had the Nazi zombies come through and they're shooting you and all kinds of stuff. And I was like, okay, like,
yep.
you get this one because of all the Duke Nukem references. I was waiting for something later on in the game, and I'm like, okay, I finally got what I wanted. It was just enough. All right, let's just continue. Then you get to the end, and
you think.
Yeah, well, the freeze frame.
the 90s sitcom freeze frame where they're laughing.
Yeah, they're laughing, freeze frame. And then the credits are scrolling, and Wallace's name is pretty much on everything. If you didn't notice that. If you're reading the credits, there's actually, like, his name's on everything. And it's, like, mm-hmm. the guy who got me coffee. And it was the guy in the cutscenes who was getting him coffee mm-hmm. and whatnot. I was like, okay. And then it stops, and then we go into, apparently, another last level. Sting Sniper Scope is not in this one, however.
Nope. He failed at his task, so Wally's got to do his own job.
Yeah, so now Matt gets transported to... See, I've got really confused. Did he get transported to the real world, or did he get transported to a video game version of Marathon Mega Soft?
The second one. He was transported to a gaming version of Marathon.
Okay.
Where Wally can insert an uber-powerful avatar of himself to finish Matt off once and for all.
Mm-hmm. Which was the hardest part of the whole game. And I gave it props because, hey, your end boss is actually really hard.
Yeah, it's a culmination of everything you did. You need to bring all your skills to the table to get through.
Yeah, one-shot kills, which sucked because he had the gun that would just automatically vaporize you in one shot, mm-hmm. which he talked about it, I think, earlier in the game, too. I don't remember if he...
He monologues. He monologues. There's also a pretty blatant Duke Nukem reference among beyond all the ones that did occur. When they're in the digital corporate office, there's a advertising standee for a game called Nuke Winter, and it's the cover art for Duke Nukem 3D, basically. And QA makes a joke about Matt and QA observe the standee, and QA goes, "Oh, don't worry about him. They've been working on him forever." Ha 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 ha.
Little do they know. He was actually right. It was right around the corner.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Not worth the wait on that one.
Nope. But then you go ahead. Right before the fight, Wallace kills QA.
Yep.
Spoilers. If you didn't notice, we are spoiling pretty much everything.
So it's called spoils. Why are you listening?
But yeah, he kills QA, which it actually got me on that one. I was like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, sure. Like, because they had the whole monologue about not sneaking up behind someone mm-hmm. to kill him. That's just wrong. And then she immediately got shot right as soon as she said that. I was like, all right, you got me. Touche. But yeah, despite everything, Matt defeats Wally with Dexter's help towards the end there. He like distracted him or something. And then you go into the scene that you talked about earlier, the edited due to violent content. Which I thought was really funny because it was like over a minute long.
Mm-hmm.
And like it was just every type of sound effect you can think of.
Leaves it all up to your imagination. They did something similar to that in Popstar, Never Stop, Never Stopping.
Yes.
There's a great fight scene that happens entirely off camera. So I'm up for gags like that. I enjoy that.
Yeah, it was one of those things like, okay. Because there, like we talked about, there was no blood in it. So of course there wasn't going to be anything ridiculously violent in the game. But like it cuts right back to it. And it just looks like they were just standing there in front of each other the whole time. Like nothing happened.
Yep. What I think was the cherry on top of the whole thing is that as Matt walks over to Wally, he goes, I'll be right back. I'm about to get the beating Wally to death with my bare hands trophy. We get the graphic that says edited out due to content. And then after it's over, you unlock an achievement called beat Wally to death with your bare hands.
Yeah.
It's great.
It was like, it's the same exact thing that he said. You get the trophy for it. So I was
the achievements in this game are great too. You pause it for the first time. They give you an achievement. You shoot somebody, like, all the expected kind of things, they just give you an achievement for in a kind of like jokingly pandering way, like, oh, you did it, like, good job here, you know.
After you defeat Wally, you get a cutscene now showing QA's real form, which turns out that he's a guy. Max is a little disappointed about it. His name was Quentin A. Myers, which QA stood there at the beginning. He was actually the programmer on Matt's early games. So I was like, Yes. Okay, like, you kind of brought it full circle. But he bought 49% of the shares for the company, the
Monolith Megasoft.
Yeah. These names are just ridiculously hard for me to pronounce.
All the bad people in the game have the most ridiculous names.
Are you sure it's Monolith? I thought it was Marathon Megasoft.
Oh, that's probably what it is. Marathon. Yeah.
Monolith's
an actual developer. I'm sorry. I keep saying that. They're an actual developer, Monolith.
Yeah. So in the game, it's Marathon Megasoft. So if Wesley ever left or got, you know, stepped down from his role, he would actually be able to take over the company then. So what he decided that he's going to do now is bring back all the classics, which is going to start by making a new Matt Hazard game.
It's a Deus Ex Machina for the ages.
Yeah. And then they say, Matt's like, all right, well, you know what that means. It's Hazard time.
That's exactly how he says it.
Yep. That's word for word the line. And he even says it in, like, not even like a reassuring way, like, or like in his catchphrase way. He's just like, all right, it's Hazard time. Like, he's just like over it now.
Yep.
But did you stay long enough for the post credit scene?
See, I must not have. I think I skipped it originally. And I didn't get around to looking for it again in the replay, but what happens after the credits?
So Wellesley is reduced to a video game store clerk at his father's company, Zap Games, which looks like a certain other video game store that's out on the market.
Like the kind you might find in the mall?
No, the one that you would stop by every now and then.
For games?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
The kind of place that would, you know, buy back a game that's a week old for, like, 25 cents?
Maybe a little bit more if there's a trade-in deal going on.
Well, with store credit, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but,
Okay.
Still going on about he has a grudge for Matt Hazard, and he's really angry and stuff like that. And he's putting new games out on, like, the release shelf. And the last game that he puts up is Eat Lead.
Ah.
So it's like, oh, they made a game off of everything that he just did, and it's the game, and
So meta.
Yeah. But, I mean, playing through it again and kind of watching everything, you know, from when I first played it, because I played it back. I mean, I was a little late to the game. I probably played it a year or so after it came out, because it dropped pretty quick in price because no one cared about it much.
Yeah.
Playing through it again, though, like, it was fun. Now, it was a lot of run into this room, shoot everybody, run into the next room, shoot everybody, door opens, proceed. But that's what all of those games were when they came out. Like, there was that time frame that we just had the same type of game being released over and over and over again. So to say that, like, oh, well, this is horrible because it's just like those games. Yeah, but those games continued to still do that.
Right. I think it's very much a game that's more enjoyable for its story than for its gameplay. And I get what you're saying. Like, it's taking pot shots at everybody, so it's not going to, like, obviously they're not going to develop a game that's on par with Gears of War when the entire point of using, like, a third-person shooter type of gameplay is to, like, commentate on things about it. Like, you know, like how Matt has to do an entire tutorial for chest high walls that he has to duck behind, and he's like, ugh, like, you act like I don't know how to, like, take cover. So yeah, it's not a completely polished game, but I'm a little bit more, I'm a little bit more lenient with this title than I would be with others, because I think that's just part of the joke.
Yeah, yeah.
Reviews, it's not long. Like, it's not, it's never drawn out, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Sure, a level may be kind of like cookie cutter, but you're not in it forever.
When the reviews came out, I mean, they were kind of mixed across the board. You were mm-hmm. looking at like 4 out of 10s and 5 out of 10s, and I think the highest was like a 6.7 out of 10 or something. Mm-hmm. I think Metacritic, it's currently sitting at a 55, which for this type of game, and when it came out, like, it came out pretty late in the game, to still get a score that high, it was shocking.
Yeah.
When I saw it. But I mean, overall, I had fun playing it. I laughed a lot at it. You can tell games like the Deadpool game got a lot of inspiration from this.
It's also something to consider whether this is true or not, but I'm just going to throw it out there. To what degree was Wreck-It Ralph influenced by this game?
Mm-hmm. I don't think much, but
probably not a lot, given mm-hmm. that, like, this game, as you said, and it did kind of disappear very quickly. So the odds that, like, Disney saw this and used any ideas from it, but it's just very amusing in that, like, you know, characters can actually, you know, perish in their games under the right circumstances.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, they have a degree of self-awareness and transporting between games. It beat Wreck-It Ralph to the punch on that a couple years ahead, not in the same manner, but the same style of commenting on video games as a form of entertainment, you know?
Yeah. Did you ever play the sequel?
Well, no, I only became aware of the sequel in doing research for this episode. It was a PS Store / Xbox Live Arcade mm-hmm. 2D shooter.
Yeah, I believe I didn't do much research on it.
Right.
I thought it had something to do very similar to like Contra. I could be mistaken.
It's basically styled like that from what I saw. Okay. The plot is that Duke goes back and... I already called him Team Nukem. Wolf. Matt goes back in time to his first games to stop villains that are trying to erase him, like, basically from the past upwards.
Okay.
So it's a Contra-style game. They basically handle everything that Matt would have been in a 2D manner with.
Mm-hmm.
So... apparently that received mixed views as well. I'm going to actually, after this, see if it's still on the store. I don't even know if it's available, but I thought that was interesting. That
when I saw the title to it, though, it was the Matt Hazard Bloodbath and Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, you're going to continue just the parodying thing. But yeah, that came out January 2010. So that came out less than a year after the actual game.
Okay, so you can assume that they maybe thought Matt Hazard would have a long kind of lifespan as a character. Mm-hmm. He didn't, though. So I wanted to ask you, like, why do you think this game has been forgotten?
Oh, man. I think it just got lost in the shuffle. Like I said, it came out at the same time that a lot of other big titles were coming out. And it's very similar to a lot of those AAA titles that got released. This came out on multiple platforms, mm-hmm. and I don't think it came out at $60 when it was released either. So going back to a conversation that we had on the Three to Play Games podcast, if you see a game out in the stores that is, you know, $30, $40 and it's a brand new release game, people are easy to think that, you know, there's not a lot of quality behind this game.
Right. It's like releasing a movie without screening it for critics. If you release a game at a low price and people aren't aware of the reasoning behind it, it's like, it's already discounted, huh? Must not be good.
Yeah.
I think there was a little degree of, I want to say, poor timing to it. It's like the majority of what is being parodied is obviously like Duke Nukem as a character. And you obviously had the generation of gamers in our age range who came up and were able to like get these jokes. But I think at that point, Duke Nukem had kind of faded so far out of the gaming culture awareness that a parody of him wouldn't have, like, it just couldn't land as hard, because it's like, why are you making fun of a guy that most people have forgotten about already? You know, like, it's a little bit of a bummer. I also think, and you may disagree with me on this, so in its mechanics, it's a parody of third-person shooters. And, like, if you kind of consider Resident Evil 4 the genesis of the modern over-the-shoulder third-person game that we got, it only really been, like, 5 years since that subgenre had been, like, sweeping, you know, around. Like, you had, I think Gears of War 2 also came out later in 2009, but I think, like, how do I put it? I know it's, like, really something really weird to focus on, but in terms of being a parody of that type of gameplay, if Eat Lead had come out maybe just a couple years later, where it could fully look at what third-person shooters have become and put more of its jokes into that, I think it would have been a little bit more successful. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. I definitely agree with what you're saying. It, I think it came out at the wrong time, like I said earlier.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, like, it could have worked. It could have worked really well if it would have just came out maybe a little bit earlier or a little bit later in its time frame. But it was, I think it was just released at the worst time possible.
Yeah. Just buried by everything else. Or
yeah,
kind of a victim of circumstance in other ways.
One thing, I mean, the game didn't do horrible.
No.
I mean, sales-wise, yeah. Yeah, I would say it wasn't received that great. But it received a nomination in the 2009 Spike Video Game Awards.
It won best. Did it win best comedy game? I think I read that it did.
It won best comedy game, but it was nominated also for best cast, which you had, like I said, you had three main characters. You had Will Arnett, you had Neil Patrick Harris, and then you had Olivia. What was her name? Olivia Hack.
As QA.
As QA, she was the voice of Phoebe in Hey Arnold.
Nice.
I was like, oh, okay, like. She does a lot of voice acting. She was also one of the Brady sisters in the Brady Bunch movies.
Oh, nice.
So okay. Just to give you a little back history on her as well, if you guys didn't know who she was. So, Tom, would you recommend this game to anybody?
I'd recommend it as a nice little laid-back comedic gaming experience. I think it's an imperfect but unique little title, and I think it's worth playing. It's brisk. It's breezy. Like I said, it's got a really funny story. Not entirely great in its mechanics, but it's fun. It's a fun time to have. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Mm-hmm. See, talking about it, I think this is going to be more than enough for somebody to go back and play. Or not go back and play, but this is all they would probably need. It's just us to talk about it and think about. Now, if they want to, they can.
Mm-hmm.
They can, you know, if they're like, oh, you know what? These guys here talking about this game that I've probably never heard of or completely forgot about. It sounds interesting. I'm going to go back and try to catch all these little things that they're talking about. Honestly, I don't think, I mean, I was like struggling trying to get through this game because like it was a rinse, wash, repeat. Every single level was the same. Now, there was some nice creative things that I haven't seen in any other game at the time, but there's just been plenty of games that have come out since then that has done the same exact thing better. Like I mentioned earlier, the Deadpool game. If you want a really funny third person, you know, action shooter, and that's kind of a beat 'em up at the same time, I would prefer going somewhere along those lines. It's a great game still. I mean, I enjoyed playing it years ago. Now, it took a lot for me to get through it.
Okay. Oh yeah, to each their own. I guess it depends on your tolerance ratio.
Yeah. I honestly, if I had a score to game out of 10, I'd probably give it a 5. 5 out of 10.
Which, good narrative, bad. Yeah, good narrative, gameplay. So yeah, 50-50,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, 50-50.
One day, the clock will strike Hazard Time again.
Don't. Why did you have to say that?
It's Hazard O'Clock, Josh.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's all the time that we could spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in the discussion on all things video games. See you in the future.